Hi, I'm Fred Schonenberg, and thank you for joining me on the Venture Fuel podcast. At Venture Fuel, we help companies find new solutions by partnering with the best startups from around the world. On the show, you'll learn the secrets of business leaders who tap into startups and the founders driving extraordinary results. We'll consider new ideas, stretch our mindsets beyond the status quo, and in the process, discover how to leap the competition and fuel personal growth. Hello, everyone, and thank you for listening to the Venture Fuel Visionaries podcast. I am your host, Fred Schonenberg. I'm the founder of Venture Fuel. We have a really special episode today. It was recorded live on February 1st, 2023, and is a celebration of our Venture of the Year and Visionary of the Year. The Visionary of the Year has become a bit of like the Hall of Fame for corporate innovators that are doing new and different things to improve their companies. And so excited to feature Antonia Dean of Comcast and all that she is doing, as well as our Venture of the Year, which celebrates the startup that we think is going to do the most change in the world. And we'll feature the company Curio today. We had them both on stage talking together in a bit of a fireside chat slash panel discussion. And I know you're going to enjoy this conversation. Very interesting when you think about change agents and people going out there to improve the world for better and drive tangible outcomes. I know you'll enjoy this episode, so get comfortable and listen up. Hey, everyone. So glad you could join us today. I'm Fred Schonenberg. I'm the founder of Venture Fuel. This is one of my favorite events that we do. This is a celebration of our Venture of the Year and Visionary of the Year. This actually started several years ago as a way to celebrate the change agents and the trailblazers that we are seeing on a daily business, or daily, on the daily for our business. And this included everyone from VCs to corporate executives to startup founders, all of whom are out there changing the status quo, disrupting industries, and building for the future. So we wanted a way in which to recognize them. And it has grown into what is essentially the Hall of Fame for innovators. And I couldn't be more excited today to welcome our winners for this year. So I'd love to bring them to the stage. We're going to have a great conversation around what they're up to, what you can learn from them, and the future of how to innovate. So if we could bring them both on first up, and I'm going to have them do the full introductions of themselves. But Antonia Dean from Comcast and Shyla Dixit from Curio Digital Therapeutics. First off, congratulations to both of you. One of the things that's very cool about this honor is that it is voted on by your peers. So we put forth the top nominees, and then we do outreach to your peers, as well as the other folks that were nominated. And both of you won quite convincingly, and I think it's a testament to what you're building and what you do. So to bring the crowd up to speed on that, Antonia, let's start with you. Could you introduce yourself and what you do for Comcast?
Sure. So hi, everyone. Thanks for having me today. My name is Antonia Dean. I am the Director of Startup Pipeline Diversity for Comcast NBC Universal. And in short, what that means and what I do every day is try to make sure that the founders that we choose to invest and partner with are representative of the communities where we do business and the customers who use our products. Comcast NBC Universal is a nationwide global company. So our founder portfolio should look like the world in which we operate. And so it's my pleasure and my job to make sure that those founders know about us, know what we're working on, and know how they can tap in and partner with us.
I love it. And Shia, what about you?
So thank you so much, Fred and, Antonia. So such a cool thing. Like, really, I have some ties with NBC. I come from GE Healthcare at one point of time, so would love to chat about that. But about me, I'm a founder and CEO of Curio Digital Therapeutics. We actually focus on women's mental health, delivered through digital first approach, followed by a completely like AI and digitally driven journey for a woman across her life cycle. So we call it like technology intertwined, empathy to intertwine with technology. It's a combination of two things together.
I love that combination. I think that there's a need for more of that in the world, those two things to be combined. I mentioned up front that one of the cool things is you've been recognized by your peers. You're obviously both incredibly accomplished in what you're doing. And I'm curious just to take a step back and why you decided to dedicate your careers to innovating in different ways, to driving change through entrepreneurship and kind of challenging the status quo. And Chaya, maybe I'll start with you.
So yeah, Fred, first of all, I want to take a moment here. You know, last week we had a really a tragic episode in a state of Massachusetts where a mom suffering from depression took her life and her children's life. And this just talks about how big a mental health crisis we are dealing with. For me, why I chose this, these stories dishearten, but also reinforce our belief in what we are doing every day. You know, we look at these kind of news and say, oh my God, we have to do something fast, you know, and get these kind of tools in hand of moms. That's the mission that we work towards. Why I decided to take this route, actually my own personal, and I'm glad we are normalizing some discussions about mental health. If you asked me this question 15 years or 10 years back, when I had my child, I would have never acknowledged that I myself suffered to some degree and did not have a very happy, you know, postpartum and pregnancy. So when I'm a physician and have worked in technology area all my life, you know, there was a calling, I think, for me to look at tools and technology that can help, that can be brought to women to take care of their mental health, which destigmatizes mental health, is available at a click when they want it, as they want it, and we meet them where they are. So it is a personal journey for me. We are very passionate about it, you know, and, you know, it was a perfect opportunity for me to bring technology and my passion and the unmet need that we have seen.
I think one thing that's really interesting that you said, obviously, there's very severe reasons for what you were doing that you mentioned. But one of the things that I think is so inspiring about what you're doing is what I'll call is urgent optimism, right? You talked about needing to do something fast. And I'm borrowing urgent optimism from Hannah Jones, who runs the Earthshot Prize, which is a sustainability prize out of the UK. But I feel that, right? You know that there's a challenge out there. It's something personal to you. And it's a matter of making that change happen today rather than hoping that change happens on its own in some way. So, Antonia, I'm going to switch over to you because I think there's actually a pretty interesting corollary because some of the work that you've done at Comcast is based on that urgent optimism of driving real change, and we'll get into some specifics of it. But curious what drew you to this work and all that you're doing at Comcast.
Yeah, so I will say you mentioned always challenging the status quo. I'm the youngest, so I always had to kind of fight back a little bit of like, wait, why do I have to do this thing? And I've always had an interest in business and business ideas. And I think initially I thought I needed to start a business, but what I realized that entrepreneurs have is that optimism, but a single-minded focus. And I've always been a generalist at heart. I can be super passionate about housing today and then really interested in climate tech solutions tomorrow. And that's not a good way to run a business. You need to focus on one thing if you're going to run a business. And so what I found is that in being able to help and support and work with entrepreneurs, I get that dose of optimism, which is honestly contagious. Like anyone who's talked to a founder for like 5 minutes, you walk away a little bit refreshed. And I get to use those same skills of thinking about how do we shape the business and what is the business model and how are we going to market? But I get to do it in multiple ways across multiple different industries and verticals. So for me, it's been a nice combination because I'm truly a generalist and I couldn't pick one area to focus on and turn into something great. So instead I've picked all of them and help try to be some wind in the sails for other folks who are building.
I love the generalist, like the imagery. My little sister always made fun of me that I was like a golden retriever that would see like a butterfly flying by and then see a pine cone and forget about the butterfly.
Yep.
and it's so fun, right? And you mentioned the energy and enthusiasm of startups. It comes through, right, with everybody that's in this space because you're out there and you're trying to do something different and you believe in it. I think one thing that might be interesting to share with the audience is when people think Comcast, they think cable, as well as, you know, NBC and Sky and the entertainment properties and Universal Parks. But some of the work that you're doing, people wouldn't naturally associate it with Comcast. And maybe specifically, you could talk just high level about the FinTech program as well as the care tech.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have obviously the consumer facing parts of our business, the brands that folks, you know, buy and have purchased tickets or get their connectivity, their broadband and their cable. But in having such a large business, we have a ton of employees. So there are opportunities where we are able to look at startup ecosystems and market signals to say, how do we make life better for the people who we employ here, for our colleagues who we work with? And I think what came really to the forefront in you know, the past few years is that so many folks had to opt out of the workforce because they had care issues that they had to deal with. They had, you know, if I can't find affordable childcare, then I will stay home. Or if I have an elderly at-risk loved one, I'm not going to go into the office and potentially be exposed. And so for us, being an employer of our size, we were saying, okay, we need to get this right. We need to make sure that our employees have the resources and the support that they need, because there are people in their lives that they care for, be those siblings, loved ones, children, pets, whomever. And so we actually partnered with our Total Rewards team, which in other companies would be called like employee benefits or HR, to say, what do we need to bring to the table for our colleagues as a benefit to support them outside of the office, so that when they are here and when they are at work, they're able to actually like do their best work without feeling pulled in multiple directions. So yeah, Fred, to your point, a lot of folks would think maybe we're only looking at the latest technology as it relates to, you know, delivering your favorite TV shows. But the truth is, as such a large company, even technology that only helps us in our back-end operations makes a huge difference because we have such a large employee base.
You also had one of the great quotes. It's always funny when you go to a conference, you want something that's quotable, right? For social media, but you were talking about the Care Tech program and you said the future of care is the future of work, which I thought was just such a beautiful way to think about the fact that this is all of us, right? We're all in this together. And there's so many opportunities to support employees and colleagues and clients that supports the whole person. So I think one thing that I would love for you to address, and Shaila, I'm going to start with you, is obviously the world has changed dramatically in the past, you know, 2 to 3 years. What impact has that had on you in terms of your startup and the importance of what you're doing? So Shaila, I'll start with you.
Yeah, so a lot has changed for all of us, right? You know, in last few years. I mean, it's a totally different world that we are today versus what we were in the beginning of pandemic around 2020, if I may say. So a lot of things from our startup, from our personal perspective, you know, it gave me time to reflect and I think make sure that I have a stronger inner circle, because when things go bad, it's your friends and family and inner circle that you rely on. This is just a personal thing. As I think sometimes entrepreneurs, you know, working, we all, you know, we every day we just keep on going on about our life, right? I think it was a moment of reflection that have I invested enough in my inner circle? And those are my core strength that are going to be with me when things are not going the way they should be, right? I mean, we all reflected back on our family and friends and relied on them for, you know, that even social strength that was needed in the moments of isolation that we all had to go through. For my startup, you know, I think one of the things was that in last 2-3 years, there has been a better adoption of technology. Sometime, unfortunately, these kind of, and I'm from healthcare industry, sometimes a major change or major episode needs to happen to fast track adoption of technology. Healthcare has been the last one to adopt technology for many reasons. I'm not reflecting that as a bad thing. They're more regulated industry. They have to look at security, patient security, and many more things before they can adopt. But we saw a fast track adoption of technology because we had to do that. Physicians had to adopt Zoom to look at virtual care and whatnot. We were sitting as an industry kind of on the sidelines, you know, to look at that adoption. So it did fast track adoption. And that had an impact on what we do, which is digital first approach. The second thing is, I think in last 2 years, we have started talking about mental health and normalizing that discussion, right? Because I can guarantee this, each one of us have somebody in our first degree who suffered from some form of mental health it could be, there is a variation in spectrum from anxiety to all the way depression and whatnot, right? So we all had started, since we were all impacted to some degree, I think we all started talking about mental health issue in a more normal fashion, that this is okay. It's okay to be not okay, right? I mean, you know, so I think that has been a very big aspect as well. So a combination of these two, three things had actually, I'm a different person from what I was personally. Our company actually, the adoption of our company and having a discussion about mental and digital had helped us have that dialogue, which I don't think so we would have been able to have it 5 years from, you know, before the pandemic started. So that's what has changed for me personally, my company, and the industry per se.
I love it. And Antonio, I love your perspective with the same question as well, because I think, you know, one of the things that people thought about when this all first started happening was, will everyone entrench and go backwards, right, to the tried and true, and not innovate and continue to push the envelope? And I feel that you all certainly, you know, went out there and supported your employees and started to do new things. But would love from the inside perspective, what impact the last few years has had on you and your role.
Yeah, so I would say that I think similar to what Shyla mentioned is, you know, February 1st of 2020, what we conceived of the realm of possibilities was much smaller than what we conceive of it now. Like, I distinctly remember at this point 3 years ago, you know, the first rumblings and being like, we would never shut down. Like, it was unprecedented. It like couldn't even imagine it. I was like, how would that possibly work? It couldn't happen. And then it did. And like, we figured it out and made it happen. And so I think that experience has led us all to be like, okay, well, what else did we think couldn't possibly happen? And let's see actually if that's true. Could it, and what would need to be true? And I'll say for my team specifically, we went from having an in-person accelerator program to having a fully virtual one and then a hybrid one. And so thinking about what actually needs to be true, what can happen, what can't, what people will do, what they won't. And sometimes you just don't know until you try it. And so it's been really refreshing that our team has been like, well, let's try it. Let's see what can actually happen. We won't know until we put ourselves out there and see what could come of it. So it's been a lovely shift of thinking around the frame of, well, why not? Why can't we try it? Why wouldn't it work? Why wouldn't this happen? And a lot of times when you start asking why not, you realize you don't really have that many reasons why not.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's sort of the old like venture capital framework of, well, what if it works?
Like, what, yeah, like what if it's amazing?
Yeah, which is a really cool way to look at things and is a way to innovate and find new solutions. Speaking of sort of the worlds that you both sit in, the acceleration of innovation, whether that's on the technology side, whether that is new business models, it just feels like it continuously gets faster and faster. And would love your perspective, and Antonio, I'll start with you, on why you think it's going so fast and how you handle that sort of like fire hose of change.
Yeah. So I think one of the reasons why innovation has really accelerated, and again, I give all kudos and props to optimistic founders, and specifically the ones that created what we call at Comcast, like enabling technologies. So it may not be the end result, but it is the thing that allows you to work much faster. There have been a lot of conversations recently in the media and the press around generative AI. Like, folks were continuously building these algorithms and these machine learning models. And now we're at a point where someone who is not a coder and who is not super tech savvy can leverage that and build a business in 2023 that they couldn't even have built 5 years ago. I think of, you know, companies like Canva that basically have made graphic design available to the world in really, really simple, easy ways. So I think that is really those enabling technologies, the things that become the workhorses in the back end that allow other people to build their dreams on top of it. That's really been a key engine of the acceleration of innovation.
How do you stay in front of that? I mean, you mentioned sort of generative AI, like that wasn't in the popular word bank, right? Like, nobody put those two words together unless you were very deep in the weeds a year ago. Or I would say the vast majority of people weren't talking about it 3 weeks ago.
Right.
Sort of jumped onto the scene. How do you stay in front of all of that and make sense of it as sort of a forward thinking part of Comcast overall?
Yeah. So I think for us, we kind of do go at it in two ways. So one is you just have to be broad in your interest and really see what's happening in the world. Fact gather, go to the things, walk the floor at the convention, see what the world is doing. Just like give yourself a ton of inputs. And then the key is every input is not going to relate to an output. Sometimes things are just going to inform your thinking. And so to decide what's going to be the output, where do we focus, is where you come back to your strategy. And so we sit at Comcast, our startup activity sits within the realm of overall strategy. What is going to drive this business forward? What's going to be the next huge division of this already huge company? Because then that gives you a frame to say, is this just cool? And I see a lot of things where I'm like, that's really cool. I just like it. I just want that kind of thing in my house. But it's not something that's from a strategic standpoint, a thing that's going to make a ton of sense for us to really go down the line and explore. So I think you look at everything and then you come back to your strategy and you weed out the things that don't match.
I love it. Shyla, can you speak to the pace of change and how it's either, you know, sort of giving you the tailwinds as you scale your business, but how do you stay on top of all that's happening and you know, what how do you make sense of the sort of speed with which everything is changing?
So, you know, first of all, I cannot just agree more with what Antonia just said. It's a, I call it like an open innovation platform, right? So there are platforms that are being created for open innovation, ChatGPT being a good one as an example that has, got a lot of attention in the last few months, where we as founders can focus on core of the problem solving while those tools are made available to us as a platform. It helps a lot. I think more and more we adopt a thinking around open innovation, you know, I think we will be able to see a fast track. So how to keep yourself, on the front of all of what's happening, because it's happening at a very, very fast pace every week, every month, which is great. So first is somebody gave me an advice some time back that surround yourself with people who are more knowledgeable than you. So, you know, making sure that my team, you know, I'm talking here and creating my network so that we are able to, there are information feeder into you. So, you know, open innovation should lead to your open mindset about making sure that you surround yourself with the ecosystem. Participate in the ecosystem. You talked about walking the floors and the conferences, or exhibits. Similarly, even in everyday, you know, opportunity, make sure that you're part of, sometimes you want to be part of accelerators or some programs, not necessarily, you know, you may know what your business is going to be, but even to know and understand what exactly other areas are going. In one of my work, I was incubating a concept when I was at GE. You know, I was part of the incubation team. And I was told in my team, I had aeronautic engineer. I'm a physician. I'm like, what am I going to do with aeronautic engineer? You know, and that was my first lesson to learn that innovation can come from anywhere. Why? Because the best algorithm is sitting with aeronautic engineer people who are looking at all of these planes who are flying, you know, and real time looking at all of that data and analytics. And that was, for me as a physician, that was first moment where I realized that actually you need to be really open when you're thinking about innovation. It can come from any direction. So another takeaway for me has been that don't necessarily hire people who are like you. In fact, make sure that you hire people who are not at all like you, so that you can actually have more innovative thinking within your team and company. So that's another thing, you know, I try to network, like keep my eyes open and talk to smarter people, learn about platforms like Venture Fuel and accelerators where you are able to listen and learn more. So be a sponge, like, you know, there's so much going on.
I love it. You said so many things I think are interesting there. I mean, one, the joke around surrounding yourself with people that are smarter than you. There's a joke internally at Venture Fuel that I wouldn't get a job at Venture Fuel anymore because our team is just so knowledgeable and has so many different experiences, which is of course by design, right? We want to surround ourselves with the brightest folks. But something that both of you, and what you just said, Shyla, and then also I know Antonia, you live and breathe this every day, and it's something we think about every day at Venture Fuel, is thinking of diverse and inclusive innovation programs, right? The importance of diversity, whether that is of thought, geography, backgrounds, perspectives, right? That is where these great innovations and sort of breakthroughs often comes from. But we also all, you know, read and know the numbers here. One recent study said women founders receive on average $1 million less than males. Only 2.3% of venture capital went to female founders in 2021. 89% of VC partners are male, right? It's one of those things that somebody that in the innovation ecosystem, it kind of shocks me because it's not how you get the best innovations. I would love for maybe both of you to talk a little bit about this. We'll start with you, Antonia, on like how are you leading and shaping the sort of future spaces that were traditionally dominated by males?
Yeah, I think you just honestly having to like be in the room and like elbow your way into having a seat at the table. And then once being there, like taking up space, I think it can be really easy to say, okay, well, you know, I'm the only woman here. I'm the only woman of color here. Sometimes it's like, I'm the youngest or I look like I'm the youngest, even if I'm not. And so let me just like be very grateful to be here. And if you're just being grateful and quiet, you're not adding any value. You're not pushing any decisions. No one else who's in the room is benefiting from your lived experience. And so I say a lot of it is just being willing to take up space and knowing that's going to be a little uncomfortable at first, but then it's a muscle you build and you will get used to it. Because if you're in the room and you don't do anything different than you being in the room, like, why were you there? Yeah. Like, if you're not going to move the needle, if you're not going to turn that 2.3% that goes to female founders into 3% and then 4% and then 5%, then kind of what was the point? So I think it's really being comfortable knowing that if you're there, it's because you are qualified to be there, and then taking up space and adding the value that only you can add.
I love that. And Shaila, from your perspective as a founder, how are you thinking about whether it's building your team or the way you're designing your products to take into account diversity of thought and backgrounds and perspectives to kind of get the breakthroughs that you described before?
Yeah, so we have a very diverse team, you know, from multiple perspective. It's not just, you know, geography. We are in US, Europe. Even if we are small and startup, we have made sure that we have people from different area and they are bringing their collective knowledge to solve a problem and bring innovation. So that's one very important thing, you know, because you never know where whose collective background and learning you will be able to learn from and innovate in your own company. So that's a very, very important aspect. I want to further what Antonia just said. You know, one is when you are there, don't just be grateful, but contribute, you know, and make sure that you take the space. I think then turn back when you leave that room, make sure that you open up what you learn to others, right? So I try to do that. Okay, if I have been able to get something, I won't say that I have achieved what I want, like we are still on a journey, but make sure that in every aspect, I am able to share back and bring two more of diverse entrepreneurs to the table and encourage them to do that. So I look at, I tell my team also, my ultimate success would be then when one day, each one of you have your own companies and you come to me and at least invite me to be your advisor. So that's what it is. Like, you know, how much you are actually giving back and making sure that you're opening that platform for others. So we have made sure our team is very diverse from multiple perspective, from educational background, you know, from geographical background, from cultural background, and so on. And another thing that we have tried to do in our team is from, you talked about diversity, we take a moment to celebrate and educate each other about every culture. So that's another thing which is very important. We actually recently just were awarded a grant from New Jersey Economic Development, and this grant is going to focus on how we modify our platform and innovation for different races, ethnicity, and women of color, and women with different background. So we are very passionate about it, because if you're not bringing, we can't solve all the problems as a startup. And that's why I think bigger companies like what Comcast is doing is so valuable for us as a startup in an ecosystem. But yes, we definitely have a desire to understand different diverse users of our innovation as well and bring something for everyone.
That's fantastic. Antonia, so one of the things that is often used as an excuse or justification is that it's hard to get a diverse pipeline, whether that's tech, talent, products, founders, that there's a struggle to find the best diverse founders, for instance. This is something you live and breathe every day. You've done a tremendous job with. It's one of the many hats you wear on the Comcast side of things. But for folks that are looking to increase the diversity of their pipeline, what pitfalls should they avoid? Where should they start? Like, how do they go about that to sort of just eradicate that as an excuse or a sort of way out of not looking for new and different ideas?
Yeah, so I would say two things. The first is, don't be afraid to actually measure things. Like, the, you know, there's the famous management saying, what gets measured gets done. So if you are, and I think many folks may approach and saying like, no, well, you know, when I was growing up, it was about being colorblind and you focused on the person. But if you are looking at the diversity of your pipeline and you're not actually looking at who's represented in terms of the things that matter, geography, race, ethnicity, gender expression, you won't actually be able to do it because you're not measuring anything. So I would say, look at where you are. Look, just honestly, pull up the picture of all your portfolio company founders and see who's not represented in that picture. And write it down and say, we're going to put some KPIs around this. It doesn't have to be, we are guaranteeing slots for this kind of person from this kind of background, but it could say, we want to talk to this many founders that fit that background. Because once you start measuring it, then you can see if you're doing well, if you're making progress, and you can see where you need to do better. The second place I would say is, the beautiful thing about where we are and, you know, the growth of startup ecosystems in this country at this point. Sorry, this conference room light just went out. But the beautiful thing about it is there are startup ecosystems and networks and communities for every kind of founder in every kind of place. If you have too many founders from Silicon Valley, then tap into what's happening at Philadelphia with Philly startup leaders. If you want folks from the Midwest, tap into Flyover Tech. If you want more Black women founders, there are orgs that are focused just on that. You have Digital Undivided, Black Women Talk Tech, the Fearless Foundation. So you literally just have to look at where you are, decide where you want to go, and then start looking, because I promise you, there is a Slack community, a WhatsApp chat, a monthly meetup, a happy hour, if not a full-fledged organization with a conference that is serving that group of founders. And all you have to do is reach out. And I have found everyone will take an initial call and just say, here's what we're working on. Here's how you could get involved.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I mean, when we work with our corporate clients, even on just a business challenge, one of the things that we've been doing for years is, you know, we'll show 3 to 5 startup solutions. They can't be the same startup solutions, right? They can't all be delivering generative AI very down the road, right? We need variation because you're attacking a problem from different ways. And over time, we continue to tweak that knob and be like, okay, where are these founders from? What's their background? What location are they from? Are they all US based? Well, we need to see what's happening in Europe. Okay, what stage are they, right? And so the easier thing would be like, here's your solution. You know, I Google searched for a startup and this is what popped up. And I think that level of rigor and making that extra step, building new inputs and new ways of thinking is how you start to find the best of the best and new ways to tackle problems across anything you're doing. So anyway, let me switch back. Both of you are very involved in the startup ecosystem and there are a number of founders listening. I love any piece of advice you have from being in the trenches, from doing this, from either helping businesses start up, scale up, to actually starting up and scaling up your own business. What advice do you have for founders out there on how to take their business to the next level? And Shaila, I'll start with you.
Sure. I was thinking about this. So I think one very important thing is, at least this is true for me, find something that you're really passionate about, right? When passion meets an unmet need, then you can focus and you're not worried about small bumps that come, because bumps do come. You know, it's not a linear journey for a startup. It's always up and down. And sometimes for startup, up and downs are actually on a weekly basis, just because it's a startup, right? Every small activity does have an impact in either positive or a negative way. So that's a very important thing. But if you have a area where you're working on, you're passionate about, and you meet your passion with the unmet need, then I think you have this, I think you talked about this restless, ambitious entrepreneur who wants to get out and get a solution out there soon. And then second thing is kind of related, I would say, resilience is really important. You know, it's not, you can see, I was telling someone, I'm like a duck, you know, entrepreneurs look very, sometimes look calm, but what's going on? I'm really trying to pedal very fast beneath the water, right? So resilience is important, but still making sure that you try to maintain your calm is really important as well. So just keep going. I think that's really important.
And Antonia, before I turn it over to you, I know it's something we've talked about before, is that there is that moment, right, where passion hits the unmet need. And it's funny, the best founders, you can feel it. They wake up in the middle of the night. And when they do, they're thinking about, oh, I could do this thing. What about this thing, right? They're consumed in hopefully a very healthy way about the problem they're solving. And when that matches up with a real value add, that's where they get through the inevitable hurdles and the needs for resilience. So I think that was extremely well said. Excuse me, well said. Antonia, from your perspective, I mean, you're seeing literally hundreds of startups pitching, then getting within Comcast, scaling within the business. Curious if you have any sort of general advice like that for founders.
Yeah, so I can just share kind of what I'm looking for when I'm looking at those pitches. And so at the earlier stages, it is really what Shyla mentioned. I'm looking at how close are you to your problem and how curious are you about the problem? Like, really dig in there. Who experiences this? When? What time of day? How old is that person? Like, how much is the solution worth to them? I'm really interested in how close the founder can get to the problem and how curious they can stay. Because if they can get close and stay curious, then they can find a solution that might work. But if they are dead set on this is the way to do it, well, it may not pan out. Every successful founder will tell you they've pivoted multiple times to get to where they are. So at the earlier stages, I'm really looking at that kind of proximity to the problem and the curiosity. And then as the company grows and they're looking at scale up, I'm starting to think of how is this person as an executor? How do they get things done? And part of that is how do they get out of the way and enable their teams to execute? So at the early, it's interesting because at the early stage, you got to know more than everyone else. But then to actually grow, you need to bring on multiple people, like Shyla said, who know more than you and be able to corral them and get them to collaborate towards one clear vision. So those are generally the things that I'm thinking about and looking at when I'm evaluating a founder and their pitch for their company.
And Antonia, I feel like you're looking into my soul and giving me advice on a venture field there. It's very true, though. I think there's a big difference between the vision and the very startup and then the execution side. And the best founders recognize where they're weak and bring on a team and start to fill those gaps, right? So you start to look at the team rather than just the founder to get after that. I'd love to take the same question and flip it on its head and ask what advice you have for large organizations, whether that is, you know, companies like the size of a Comcast or hospitals, really wherever you want to kind of take it. But how do they remain innovative and kind of be willing to try new things when, of course, their mandate, right, is to protect the core, be efficient, they've got shareholders, stockholders, et cetera. But very curious what advice you would have for large organizations on continuing to innovate and stay relevant. And Antonia, I'll flip it to you first.
Sure. So I definitely have thoughts here, Fred. I've shared them with you previously. I am a big proponent of your innovation team should physically be separated. If everyone is on the 25th floor, put them on the fourth floor, because you need people to kind of get out of the standard box to actually start thinking of those new solutions. I think one of the examples Shyla shared earlier is exactly right. Put an aerospace engineer next to a physician, because what they're going to come up with together is going to be better than what either of them could have done separately. So really do those cross-functional very diverse experiences, educations, all you want all of those different points of view coming into the room together. And then I think you also have to kind of allow the team, you have to set aside which rules can be broken and which ones can be followed. So there are certain things, well, if we always do it this way, we always have this meeting on Tuesday, maybe the innovation team meets on Thursday. Like, let them work a little bit differently. Let them explore. It's better to let them go wild and then pull them back in than to start that team with a bunch of rules and a lot of rigidity, because again, they're not going to come up with great solutions. If they come up with a great out-of-the-box solution, you can figure out how to execute it. But if they're constantly having to operate within rules, they're not going to give you anything that's more than one or two steps beyond what you would have already come up with.
I love it. And Chala, I'm going to turn to you, but also for those of you listening, feel free to post questions. We'll try and get them answered here in just a second, and want this to be very interactive. But Chala, what advice would you have for large organizations?
I think, you know, I'll just further what Antonia just said here, making sure that there are more of these platforms where smaller startup companies can come and work with bigger organizations, because processes are great. We need processes, but they are also counter sometimes to innovation. The smaller companies, we are sometimes nimble. We are able to do things faster and often driven by passion of one or two people, which is very difficult in a larger organization to get everybody along. Like, it may be one person's passion, but then you have all of this, approval process that need to happen to execute on something. And that's why a platform where multiple startups can scale or grow or innovate is really important. And, you know, my request to all big companies would be that, and we are seeing more and more of them, to create such platforms to work with smaller companies and startups, because sometimes startups are able to do it because they don't have that very strict box around them. And often they are driven by somebody's passion who has seen that unmet need, very closely experienced it, and they are trying to bring a solution.
I think it's so interesting, right? A founder has that single-minded focus. It's almost like a flashlight of like power, right? They're going after this thing. And for a large organization, that's one of very many lights, right, that are in the organization. But why not empower that person to go after that thing? And then, you know, down the road, if it makes sense to be incorporated somehow, even as a customer, for the large organization, it's such a powerful way for both organizations to grow and learn from each other. So it's obviously, I'm very biased there, but I believe it's a really great way for both groups to grow and unlock challenges that would take them a long time to do otherwise. It's just more efficient for both parties. So before I go to the Q&A from the audience, I do have a question. You know, we're supposed to be, the title of this is What's Next Now. I want to peer out into the future a little bit. And I can't think of two people that have a better view of what's going to change in our world. So pick 5 years, 10 years, whatever you would like to. What do you think is different about the world that would surprise us? And that could be a new technology, a startup, a new way of working. Just curious, if you're looking into your crystal ball, what would you tell somebody at a dinner party is going to be different out in the future? And Chala, I'll start with you.
I imagine a world where everybody has access to healthcare. Doesn't matter where they are sitting, you know, which socioeconomic demographic they come with at their fingertip. That's our vision, you know, and I hope 10 years from now, we are not talking about health equity. We are not talking about access issue. We are not talking about affordability, because these are basic things that everybody needs to have. And this can be enabled by technology. And I think we are on a path to do it. And I hope we keep this momentum that we are seeing with technology adoption to make it happen.
I love it. Antonio, what about you?
Yeah, so I hesitate to give a specific prediction, because I think that, one, the younger generation that's coming up now and the technology that is being developed that they will have access to, whatever I think of, I think is going to be too small. I think we are going to be surprised by the way people leverage things like generative AI or leverage these kinds of technologies to do things that haven't even crossed our minds yet. But what I do think is that we are moving towards and will continue to be in a space that is just much more inclusive, much more aware of how we treat other people, how we show up, and making sure that things are accessible and that more folks have seats at the table and more people are contributing to the discourse and more people are inputting on, you know, where we go in the future. I also think I'm really optimistic and heartened that I think that there are so many brilliant minds thinking about climate, that I think that we're going to see some really amazing innovations from the very, very big to how we all get energy down to the small of like what our things are made of or how we are able to recycle. So I'm very optimistic about the future. And I think anything more specific that I would predict would be too small, because I think so many brilliant people are working on and thinking about and studying and creating new solutions that where we end up is just going to be like a wow. Like in the same way that now we all said 3 years ago, we couldn't have imagined how the world shifted on a dime. I think we're going to be in the same situation in 10 more years.
I love it. I will say that the beauty of being a futurist, if you wanted to be that, is you can predict things 10 years out. Nobody remembers 10 years from now. So you keep pushing it forward as new things come in. You always have a job. But I agree with you completely. And it's we do, and Antonia, you know this, we do a weekly call, Adventure Fuel, where our team brings startups that excited them during the week. And it's not related to any client. It's just basically to let them fuel their passion, look for new things. And every week I leave just like floored with how the world is changing, the optimism, the urgent optimism, both around the environment as well as solving difficult problems in new ways. And it's a very, very energetic world that's coming with the solutions to some hard problems, which I think is really cool. So we've got a bunch of questions. I'm trying to get to them all. I think this one is great for both of you. How do we caution founders from experiencing burnout? I think on the mental health side, Chyla, this is extremely interesting, as well as given yourself as a founder, and Antonia, you see it every day, right? There are founders going 24/7. So Chyla, I'd love to turn this to you first.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, founders do go 24/7. I mean, and again, if it's your passion, I try to stop my thinking around like 8 or 9 bedtime, but it doesn't happen. But I don't think so there's anything wrong in it, you know, because that's your passion. The key thing I would say is that just understanding how you are, there are core things that you, I have some hobbies that I have developed, and making sure that I do take out some downtime for those things to balance out. So Saturday, I try to have my unplugged day, little bit, at least half a day, you know, and just try to focus on some of the meditation, some inner things, yoga, like whatever you want, walking in the jungle, like trees, you know, if not anything. So I think that's really important. Just define that one moment, you know, and then somebody told me that take out every day half an hour to talk to yourself. So you can call it meditation. You can call it any. I find it very difficult to stabilize my mind to meditate, although we preach this on our platform. So, but you know, but again, it's very difficult. So I like the term that I can talk to myself. So half an hour talk to myself. That's a moment of reflection, and that helps me a lot because it energizes me. What's my purpose? Why we are doing this? And keep going. But yeah, there is no like. I would say a proven mantra that works for everyone. But yeah, just finding time for yourself is really important to avoid that burnout.
I was found my struggle with the meditation was I wanted to be the best meditator ever, which is of course the opposite of what you should be doing. So it's a tough one for me too. Antonia, what about you? What advice do you have?
Ask for help. We ask for help. Nobody makes it to anywhere that they are proud of by themselves. And so often, you know, founders at the early stage want to be the one to do everything. And you just can't. There's not enough hours in the day. You don't have the physical capacity. So ask for help. If in your business, you don't have the resources because, you know, investing rounds may be smaller, runway may be tight, ask for help in your personal life. If you need help, if you're like, hey, you know what? I haven't been able to go to the grocery store in 4 days. Ask the person in your life who like, hey, could you grab a gallon of milk and some Cheerios for me while you're there? Like ask for help because you just simply will not be able to do everything you want to do and need to do all by yourself. And the thing that will get you from where you are to the next level is knowing which things are the best use of your time and which things either don't need to be done or someone else can do. And when someone else can do it, ask them to do it. Because I think you'd be surprised people are more likely to say yes than they are no.
I love that. I also think with founders too, there's almost like a belief that once I get to this level, it's going to get easy, right? Like, it's like, if I just get here, everything's going to get easier. And like, you have to think about it, whether it's sports or video games, is like, it's actually the opposite. Like, you're leveling up. Like, the other characters are going to get faster. The opportunities are going to get bigger. Guys guarding you are going to be stronger, right? Like, all the things, like, you just keep going up. It's going to get harder. And so you need to recognize you're in this for a long haul. And so you need some stability, some breaks, the moments of reflection. You need help from others. You cannot wear every hat and get the company to where you want to go. There's almost zero examples of that where the one person gets it to a certain level. There's always an amazing team. So asking for help in your company and outside of it, I would echo. This is a very interesting question. And Antonio, this is focused on you to begin. What have you noticed is one of the biggest myths around people's understanding of corporate DEI programs?
That's a really good one.
Different ways, yeah.
Yeah, I will say one of the biggest myths that I experience is that DEI sits within HR and that DEI begins and stops with the talent you recruit and the people you have working in your organization. And that's one part of it, and it's a very important part. But there's also the piece of baking those principles into how you operate. And so that's what my job is more focused on, is how do you take those DEI principles and apply that lens to how you're sourcing companies, how you're engaging with them, how you're, you know, setting up the programs or the interactions with them. So DEI is not just about your team. It's not just about talent acquisition, development, promotion. It is really about how, like, that's, I would say, level one, like, start there for sure, but keep pushing and bake it in and say, okay, again, how are we engaging with this? Are we only inviting, you know, founders to office hours that take place from 3 to 5 p.m.? Okay, you might be excluding founders who have young children that they have to care for. So it's how are you inclusive along all lenses? If you're only doing 3 to 5 p.m., are you only looking at people in the U.S.? What is a time that would make sense for a founder who's based elsewhere in the globe? So for me, the myth is that it's only about your team, and it's really about your operating principles and how you apply that lens to kind of every business decision that you make.
I love it. Shiloh, is there anything you would add to that?
No, I think I love it that it should be like actually the fabric of the culture. Should not just start as like, okay, you know, we have enough diversity, some programs and done. You know, it's actually in everyday thinking how you just integrate and make it, you know, a part of your fabric of your culture. So absolutely. And, you know, a very important, since we are talking about innovation, I think DEI should be there should be another I after it, you know, which is innovation. You can't innovate if you don't have DEI. So it's not just culture. You know, if you are thinking about that you are an innovative company, you need to have a DEI as part of your thinking, you know, that we are going to innovate because we have diverse thinking in our team, you know, people who are contributing from different kind of backgrounds.
I also think if it's part of your fabric, it's not just a press release, right? Like, and people feel that. Yes. And they recognize it's true. I remember years ago, we were searching for vendors for something at Venture Fuel. And the team was presenting me with very big company solutions. And I was like, where are the startups in this space? And they're like, oh, well, you know, we wanted something, you know, that wouldn't break, that would be tried and true. And I'm like, hey, we have to drink our own Kool-Aid. Like, if we're really all about startups solving problems, let's go find startups that can solve our problems too. And it's something that we think about from the diversity standpoint in terms of our hires, but also, who are we working with? What are the programs we're working on? And I think that authenticity starts to come through when you really live and breathe it. So I love the idea of it becoming part of the fabric of how you're thinking. I want to thank both of you on a bunch of different levels. One, for your time today and this really enjoyable conversation. But two, for all that you're doing in the world to spark change. The work you've chosen to do is hard. It is super exciting and energizing, and you're both doing it at the highest levels. And I'm proud just to know both of you, and excited for what you will create and do in the year's future. But I think your peers nailed it. You both deserve this honor, and we're thrilled to have been able to be a part of this in some way and to be able to host you today. So thank you for everything.
Thank you for inviting. Thank you so much. And thanks for this amazing platform. So thank you so much. It's amazing.
Yes, I absolutely echo everything Shyla said. Thank you so much for having me, for inviting me, for sharing this platform and being compatriots and co-conspirators in this kind of work of really like pushing innovation forward with an open and inclusive mindset.
I love it. Well, everyone that listened, I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. Here's to a great 2023. I don't know what happened in January. I feel like this should be the beginning of January, but somehow that slipped us by. But thank you for joining us today and I hope everyone has a great day.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ventureful Visionaries podcast. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I enjoyed the conversation with them. And please subscribe, listen, share this with any peers that you think might be interesting. And if you have anybody that you think should be next year's Venture of the Year or Visionary of the Year, share it with us on LinkedIn. Just look up at Venture Fuel on LinkedIn. That is also where we post new episodes of the podcast and all sorts of tech for large corporations, startups, venture capitalists. It's sort of our hub for sharing with the world what we're up to and what innovations you should be paying attention to. So thank you again for taking your time to listen and spend time with us and our guests. Wishing you a great day or evening, wherever you might be. And we'll see you and hear from you next time.